Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we are continuing our conversation from last week on the problem of sentimentality.
So this will be part two, and we actually recorded this in one long take, and so you'll just hear it pick up here in the middle of the conversation that we were having last week and continue forward.
As I'm sitting here in the middle of this discussion, I just can't help but to think how important it is that I have not just a theology of evil, but I also understand just the entire narrative of Scripture, right? Creation, fall, redemption, and consummation. Because each of us are going to, we like... If I'm a creative person, I'll live in the creative category, but I'll maybe skip the fall and jump, you know, straight to the Gospels. And so, if I'm really intrigued with evil, I'll just kind of stay in the fall and I'll be hopeless and I don't ever get to Jesus. And so I think it's really important to just, again, I'm just sitting here thinking about the entire narrative, the whole arc of Scripture, and how all of this is helpful to pull me out of my sentimentality as I kind of balance between hope and reality and mystery.
So at the beginning of the article, Bob, he mentions that sentimental or cynicism is usually born kind of out of the seedbed of sentimentality. Curious, reading this article and then, you know, reading the book on cynicism, what kind of connections you've made between kind of wrestling through the category of cynicism and then now sentimentality?
It's helpful for me knowing Dick Kise's answer to both, which is gratitude. Mm. So he does a series of three talks: sentimentality, cynicism, gratitude, which is interesting to think about, like, how does gratitude open up something mm-hmm. that's different than both, right? Gratitude can be thankful to God in the midst of a broken world for the good that we do experience and all the richness of the ways we see the grace of God in the midst of brokenness. Gratitude also works against cynicism, because to be grateful, I can't be seeing through everything. Mm. And so it's interesting that, like, if cynicism is an overly dark and negative view of the world and sentimentality is an overly sunny and positive view of the world, it seems like wisdom is right in the middle. Wisdom is a view of the world that embraces creation and fall, right? Mm-hmm. That has a meaningful sense of both, that this is my Father's world, so it's not as dark and as hopeless as it could possibly be. God is at work in this world. The gospel is true. There's good. Also, the fall is real. Sin is real. Dysfunction and brokenness are real, and the world is complicated in its brokenness. It's not simple and sunny all the time. So it's interesting to sort of reflect on all three of those categories. Bethany, I'm interested in your thoughts as you're sitting here. Do you have anything that's bouncing around in your mind?
The only thing I felt like after reading this article that I came to mind was just like, my tendency personally to like want to avoid pain at all costs. And I think that towards the end of the article, he kind of touches on it. Like a lot of this could kind of maybe be that just like avoidance of pain or wanting to like smooth things over, avoid any kind of conflict or any hardships or anything. And I definitely like see that a lot in myself. And so I know that other people are experiencing that as well. And yeah.
Where have you experienced sentimentality in Christianity? Like, what are the things for you that you can go, oh, this is where I notice that?
I think it is a lot of times in that example that you guys kind of gave of like people sharing openly and honestly like struggles and hardships that they're going through, and I feel the tendency in my heart to want to like tie it up with a bow or mm-hmm. have something really thoughtful and profound to say. And even like personally having experienced pain and loss and grief and things like that, I know that that's not helpful, but I still find myself mm-hmm. like wanting to go there. And I think of like, that's just, I can't be the only one that feels that way. There's just other people who feel that way. And they, mm-hmm. and then you experience it when people offer advice or, well, unwarranted advice, or they try to, yeah, just make you feel better, or I don't know, mm-hmm. by by saying something that's really not helpful at all in situations where you're hurting or in situations where somebody else is hurting. And I feel like that's where I have seen it the most after reading the article. I felt like, yeah, that has happened a lot that I've seen.
If you have an 8-year-old, they should be sentimental, right? Like, I think where we overcorrect here is parents, like, I got to expose my kids to all the brokenness in the world or they're not going to be mature. Like,
oh, man.
No, an 8-year-old should be very convinced the world is nice and happy.
Yeah, let them be.
By the time they're 20, they need to be dispossessed of that notion a little bit, right? So there's those of you who are thinking about, like, how does this apply to, like, how I lead kids or how I teach kids? We don't want to give them a simplistic view of the world, but there is a sense in which, like, there's a growth to maturity here that if every 8-year-old was, you know, really deeply in touch with the darkness and brokenness and pain of the world, I don't think they could live life, you know. So
read them Job as bedtime story.
Yeah, no. you know, let there be this sense of, like, that innocence and discovery, right? Like you mentioned, Dusty, like every kid in junior high that has that experience of, like, oh, this person doesn't actually like me. I just thought they did. That's a really hard thing to go through, but, like, it's actually sanctifying to go through that because it's one of those moments where you go, oh, the world isn't as clean as I kind of wish it was. And that's just a natural part of growing up. And I think Christian parents who have a robust view of the gospel sometimes want to protect their kids from those moments because it's just hard to watch that disillusionment happen, you know? And, but it's kind of necessary. It's a healthy part of growing up for kids to have to go through that. And for you to just be able to walk alongside them and say, hey, that hurts, doesn't it? But guess what? This is part of what it means to experience the brokenness and sadness of the world, you know?
The interesting piece about this sentimentality, the entire thing, is that Christians have a unique opportunity to get rid of it. or to put it in its right lane, I should say.
What do you mean by that?
With just proper tension between evil and hope. I just keep thinking about the mystery reality that Dick Kise keeps bringing up because we should be able to live with this tension of, hey, it doesn't have to be perfect, and yes, we're longing for it to be different, and eventually it will be different. So I think we have a unique opportunity as Christians, even as we live with this pandemic in the backdrop, we have this opportunity to live in this current day and age with this tension of, like, yeah, this is rough. Like, this is going to be rough. And at the same time, we can live with hope that, well, sovereignty will sort this out for us. And that's not putting a bow on it. It's just living in reality.
Yeah. And maybe where you're using the word tension, which is a good word, I might add the word depth, in the sense that, like, actually what I think marks faithful Christianity is a depth understanding of sin and brokenness, and a depth sense of hope and confidence in the future.
Yeah.
Right. Richard Lovelace talks about a depth understanding of sin, is what he calls it, which is just, it's the cross chart, right? It's the whole idea of, like, actually going deep enough into all the complexity of sin and brokenness that's actually a mark of maturity. And a shallow view of sin is going to lead to sentimentality, right? So a rich understanding of the gospel should give us a deeper sense of the brokenness and pain of the world and an ability to enter into that. And then also a deep sense of hope and confidence that this is my Father's world and the story of the gospel is true and this is all heading toward a glorious future. And, you know, that gives me a deep, settled sense of actual real hope, not just sentimental niceness. The third point, by the way, that we haven't talked about is that Jeremy Begbie point that sentimentality avoids meaningful action in the world. And so that sort of, like, I sort of stay at a distance and don't actually enter in meaningfully. Whereas, again, the gospel, because it has a deep understanding of sin and a deep understanding of redemption, would call me toward a meaningful entering in to be the hands and feet of Jesus in whatever ways I'm able to in my little corner of the world. And that entering in is itself a living out of the gospel we believe, right? That says, hey, Jesus took on flesh and blood. And so we move into the world with the love and grace of God, not trying to paper over its brokenness, but moving to the places of brokenness and trying to bring redemption in the little ways that we can. And we see people doing that even right now in the midst of the sort of pandemics, right? Is just, man, Christians faithfully moving into places of vulnerability and brokenness and hardship and saying, hey, let us serve here. Let us be here.
as I was reading this article, I stopped in the middle, actually, and texted my wife and told her how grateful I am for her, because she seems to toe this line pretty well. She's been sick for 2.5 years and just had this fever that she can't get over. And so it's not without a lack of trying. I mean, we've done some crazy things. Even if I were to just do a time lapse of our life over the last 2.5 years, the amount of doctors we've seen, the amount of trips we've taken, the amount of you shouldn't know the Mayo Clinic the back of your hand the way that I do right now. So it's not without a lack of effort, but so I think it's important to go like, no, I actually would want this to be better. And so I need to pursue the channels that I have to get things better if I can make them better, while still being okay with a lack of answers and settling into the mystery and settling into I need to face this honestly, but yet with hope. And so I think the reason I stopped and texted her and told her that she toes this line really well is because she has this desire to be well while still maintaining the fact that she might not be well the way she thinks she'll be well. And so there's that mystery component, and she does a way better job at it than I do. And so she can be more hopeful. She can be more, even Christ-like and very mindful of other people. But what's interesting for us is there's a lot of people that hate the fact that she's going through this. Like, they almost hate it more than she hates it, you know? And there's this, there's been a couple instances where like people just legitimately can't handle it. And so they've bailed. Like, they just can't be in relationship with her. It hasn't been like, hard or difficult, like they weren't like super close friends or super tight, but there's even this one instance where this lady was asking for an update. I remember this like clear as day. This lady was asking for an update, and when my wife gave it to her, which was somewhat, she tries to do it graciously, because when people are asking you how you're doing, what they want is a hopeful response, right? And the lady just legit walked away. Like, she didn't respond with this sentimentality. She just responded.
She turned
with,
and walked away.
I don't like that, so I'm out.
Yeah.
No words.
Wow.
So it's interesting to even ask the question of like, well, hey, how are you doing? You know, which we're flippantly throwing around all the time. Are we okay with? Can we become okay in our own skin with the real answers, and be okay with the way that feels?
And something that popped into my mind as you were talking, Dusty, too, is, I wonder how many of us Christians, I mean, there's an aspect of in our soul that's prone to sentimentality, but maybe we've just been discipled in this way. We've been discipled to give answers and to approach entering into people's suffering in a particular way. And so maybe it's not necessarily that the problem is just, I'm just prone to sentimentality, but this is just the model of Christianity, the model of engagement that has dominated Christian discipleship for so long that we don't know how to do this any other way.
And that's a really helpful point to make, Chris, because I think the average person actually wants to be vulnerable, honest, and real. They don't want to live on the surface. Yeah. It's just, there is something in our culture and in our discipleship that sort of feeds that. And it's not just Christianity. Like, it's the Hallmark Channel, right? Let's just, actually things that happy movies that make people feel good are movies that like have a problem, but it's not a very bad problem. And it gets solved in 2 hours and then we all feel good, you know? And so there's a sense in which there's something about the world we live in that sort of wants to force us into that mold. And actually it's a way of rebelling against the Bible story in an odd way, right? It's a way of saying, hey, things aren't actually that bad and we don't actually need a bloody Roman cross to solve them. We just need people to be nice to each other. So it's interesting if you think about sentimentality as an avoidance of the gospel, but in a different way, right? If cynicism is an avoidance that says like, things are a mess and they're never going to get better and everything's dark, sentimentality avoids the gospel by the problem isn't really that bad and it doesn't take crucifixion to make it better.
So, hey, where did this come from? Like, this is definitely the case of like, I didn't grow up as a Christian, but this is definitely, you can smell this in the church and, or I should say in evangelicalism over the 80s and 90s for sure. And it's even why, even on Sunday morning, right? Like how a lot of churches will have this momentum up to the preached word, right? Yeah. Like I got to get things going.
Yeah.
Where does this stuff come from? Like, why is it here?
Do you want like a historical analysis?
Yes, I do. Chris, give us that.
My argument would be is that this, for, at least for American evangelicalism, and again, this can be a bit reductionistic, but I would say historically, this traces back to Norman Vincent Peale and the whole power of positive thinking, where he was kind of combining new thought and this sense that your mind and your the way you think sort of constructs your reality. And once he birthed that with Christianity, and then you had guys like Robert Schuller and the kind of the televangelist sort of mindset, mm-hmm. like that just began to permeate. And the modern, probably the most modern version of that is Joel Osteen. Yeah. So that mindset, that sentimentality mm-hmm. has been a dominant force in shaping American evangelicalism since, mm-hmm. you know, the 20s.
Yeah.
Sorry, I meant the 50s.
I think you're right, yes.
Bob, what's your theory? Same as Chris's? You're a church historian. Let's go. Where's this stuff come from?
That's an interesting angle. I hadn't thought about Norman Vincent Peale and all of that. I was going to surmise, then it's only an assumption, that you know, if you think about the World War I and World War II generations, they didn't have this problem. Like, their lives were yeah. full of death and yeah. suffering and destruction. And so I think there's, after World War II in the late 1940s and 1950s, there's a real desire in America to, like, turn the corner from that and have things be better. And you had a post-war economy that was really booming. There's a lot of reasons why it felt like, oh, good, now that's mm-hmm. behind us, and we can all be happy. And, you know, so I wonder if there's some... I think this is somewhat generational. I don't know that every generation of Christians in history has always been sentimental, nor do I think American Christianity has always been sentimental. I think it does sort of follow trends in what's going on in the world and what's going on in our circumstances. What's your thought?
Yeah, yeah. Certainly wasn't sentimental during the Civil War.
Right.
Or, you know, and I think this is what's the good news too, is that Christian tradition, if we're going to talk about just like Christian thought, has the resources to pull us out. That right. there are theologians and others that have written on this very helpfully to ground us in biblical truth in a utterly honest way about sin, but an utterly hopeful way about the gospel. So it isn't like we have to, you know, sort of reinvent and correct, and, you know, there are resources we can tap into here that I think are important.
Okay, I got another angle for you. An episode or two ago, I talked about how Christianity in America has undervalued the wisdom literature. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what we experience here. I'm reading this interesting book by Zach Eswine on Ecclesiastes. And one of the things he sets us up for in Ecclesiastes is he says Ecclesiastes is a hard book for some Christians to engage with, because if you think about a book like Romans, you get the problem and the solution within three chapters. You know, it's like mm-hmm. sin,
yeah.
all of sin and fall short of the glory of God. Therefore, justification by faith. Ecclesiastes teaches us to start with the reality of all of life under the sun. It's more of a general revelation approach of just says, hey, can you relate to the fact that life feels meaningless? And like, you thought you were going to find meaning here and you chased after it and it wasn't there. Can you relate to the fact that there's a vanity to all the labor that we do under the sun? It sort of works from the bottom up and looks at a non-Christian across the room and says, hey, haven't you experienced this? So have I. You know, what does this mean for us? And he talks about the fact that that's a really hard thing for Christians it's hard for us to live on that register mm-hmm. because it feels like we're holding back the answer. Like, we know the answer is Jesus, but we're not going to talk about it yet. And he talks about how actually the book of Ecclesiastes, the whole book is sort of like an extended meditation on vanity. And you just never get the answer mm-hmm. till like chapter 12. And he just talks about how, because most of us are used to a problem solution mm-hmm. gospel message, we haven't learned how to sort of like walk in yeah. the reality of life under the sun. So I think there's something here about just our theological diet, even in America, and how we've undervalued parts of the Bible that I think actually would help us have some resources to mm-hmm. to crush sentimentality and replace it with a more realistic view of the world.
So if I'm listening and I'm like a super honest person and I see things completely evil all the time and my glass is half empty every day.
You mean you're like me, you're a cynic?
Yeah, I'm like super cynical. How do I grow in this and realize this, but at the same time, not overcorrect?
Gratitude, you know, embracing, the beauty and goodness of God's story in the world. And I think just a commitment to honesty, both about suffering and joy. I think as Christians, we have to be committed to sharing honestly pain and celebration, suffering and joy. Yeah. And I think churches can err on either side. You know, some churches are so into lament that they never get to joy, and some churches are all happy and they never get to lament. I think there's a sense in which embracing the necessity of both and the importance of entering into both together, so that I can rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep, as Paul tells us.
Another way to frame that too is sometimes it, and I don't think this is always intentionally, but sometimes the way this gets framed is just stop paying attention to the negative and focus on the positive. And that doesn't help either, because that's, this makes this like an either or kind of thing, rather than how does the hope answer the suffering? How does it speak to it and begin to shed light on the entirety of the story? Not just, you know, hey, stop looking at all that negativity. Only focus on positive, ignore the bad, focus on the good. Because I don't think that's helpful either, because that's a sense of denial. That's actually minimizing honesty. What's important is how does the hope, how does the gospel, how does the truth of that Jesus has defeated sin and death, and he is going to restore his creation, it speaks a greater word, a more powerful word into the darkness that we see.
Okay, let me answer this missiologically too. Get some non-Christian friends.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, the people in our church that I think seem to struggle the most with sentimentality, I think, hey, part of the answer is get around some people that don't have a saccharine view of the world, because they'll dispossess you of your sentimentality really fast. I remember one of my favorite gospel community stories. We were in my living room, and my friend Katie, who was a newer Christian at the time, and it just really like was unpacking a lot of the sadness of her story. And someone in the room did the thing where they, you know, said something that was like a trite answer. And she literally, like, she didn't have the capacity at that moment to like pretend that that was okay. And so she literally just started crying and was like, that is not helpful at all. And I don't even know what to do with that. And it was this powerful moment of like, hey, that not only helped her, but it helped the person across the room who just saw in that moment, like, oh, I was really trying to be helpful, and I just see now how that wasn't very helpful. And so I think like getting in your life people who don't love Jesus, don't believe the gospel, maybe have a, either in a cynical or a sentimental way, a different view of the world, sometimes is a really powerful way to sort of dispossess ourselves of some of our tendencies here.
And it's helpful when they're super honest with, when you're not helpful too.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we always say in the intro to this podcast, right, we're trying to apply the gospel to everyday life. And so the takeaway here is the gospel should defeat sentimentality. The gospel should replace sentimentality with a more robust honesty about both the darkness in the world and the hope of the gospel. And so, you know, if you like, what's the takeaway? The takeaway is, hey, we want to become more aware of the tendencies we have towards sentimentality so that we can see how the gospel offers us something different. And so that we begin to apply the resources of the gospel to sort of like break through that shallowness and that sentimental view of the world into a more realistic sense of both darkness and light.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.